This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Welcome to Area News. Important stories that impact your life do not always happen in the metro area. Keep up with the news happening all around you and in your neighborhood, no matter where you live. For the next 60 minutes, it's Area News, right here on your audio reading service.
Welcome. This is Area News, and I'm your reader, Rich Krause. With the audio reading service of the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from three area newspapers, from Auburn, Angola, Kendallville, and Cherubusco, Indiana, the KPC News, covering DeKalb, Steuben, Noble, and Whitley counties, and from Bluffton, Indiana, the News Banner, covering Wells County. And now we'll begin from KPC News, from Albion, Indiana, the Albion New Era, dated Wednesday, October 1st, 2025. Copyright 2025, KPCNews.com. Council Working with School on State Road 9 Crossing, by Matt Goetz. Albion. The Albion Town Council continues to work on an agreement with Central Noble Schools regarding providing a crossing guard at the south side of the intersection of State Road 9, Orange Street, and State Road 8, Main Street. Town Attorney Kurt Bachman brought the latest iteration of the interlocal agreement before the Town Council during Tuesday's regularly scheduled meeting. Outside of the corporation's normal jurisdiction for providing a cross guard, the corporation will be providing crossing guards to assist children crossing State Road 9 before and after school. To cut costs, the school board has shrunk its bus routes, leading to an additional 50 children who have to make the twice-daily crossing from west of State Road 9. The crossing guards are needed because of the new pedestrian crossing equipment installed by the Indiana Department of Transportation. Prior to this summer's installation, the traffic light in town was set on a timer, alternating the time the green light was displayed for both north, south, and east-west traffic. Now, the new signal equipment defaults to keep the light for north-south traffic green, according to Town Marshal Scott Cole, with two exceptions. If the magnetic sensor installed in the pavement detects waiting east-west, west-east cars at the intersection, or if the pedestrian crossing button is pressed. If the pedestrian crossing button is not pressed, children or other pedestrians would never be given the all-clear signal to safely cross the intersection. The Town Council agreed to Bachman's suggested changes, which called for the school to provide the training for the crossing guard employees, with the town released of its liability involving the position. Cole gave his approval to Bachman's proposed plan, which will now be presented to the council for a future vote. If the council okays the plan, it will be sent to the school board for its approval. Officials seem to be in agreement that something needs to be done to facilitate crossing at that intersection. That's a dangerous place to be, Cole said. Also, at Tuesday's council meeting, the town approved its 2026 budget on second and final reading. The 2026 proposed budget is $5,953,000, $965,000 more than was advertised for 2025. The bulk of the increase is due to expanded TIF appropriations, the town said. The council approved an additional appropriation of $493,000, which is the amount the town received for its 2025 Community Crossings grant. The amount won't be paid to Pulver Asphalt Paving, the contractor doing the work, until the job is completed. Tuesday's vote frees the town to encumber the funds for next year if the work is not completed this year. The town announced leaf pickup would begin on October 14th and end on December 3. Those dates are dependent on weather and workload. Next, from KPC News, the Albion New Era. Feds Step Up Illegal Immigration Pickups from Jail, by Matt Getz. Albion. Since April, the Noble County Jail has seen an increased presence of U.S. Customs Immigration Enforcement picking up alleged illegal immigrants. In late February, Noble County Jail Commander Jenny Cummins estimated there was an average of at least one person per week being booked into the Noble County Jail who may be in the country illegally. Booking photos and fingerprints were forwarded to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. In all 2024, she said, ICE officials picked up perhaps four or five of these individuals. Today, ICE has become more proactive. Since April 13, people booked into the Noble County Jail have been picked up on Department of Homeland Security immigration warrants, more than doubling 2024's total in the first 8.5 months of the current year. The Department of Homeland Security is the umbrella that ICE operates under. They are being incredibly responsive, Cummins said, of the time period since April. They're here. If an arresting officer or jail staff suspects a person who is being taken into custody is in the country illegally, local jail officials book them into the jail under a no-bond hold, per judge's local bail rule. Jail officials then contact ICE with that person's fingerprints, photo, and other descriptors. The county gets one of two responses back from the federal agency, no response or request advance notice of that person's release. If ICE is interested in the person, that agency can issue a 48-hour hold. By law, immigration offenders can only be held for 48 hours. In the past, according to Cummins, well under 50% of those 48-hour hold orders weren't followed through on, and the suspect was released. That's changed dramatically. In the past, it was unusual to see immigration officials here, Cummins said. Now, it's not unusual. The Homeland Security warrants given to local officials only state the immigration violation for the hold, such as an expired work visa or never having received a visa. They do not alert county authorities as to what other criminal charges, if any, the individual may have logged against them in other jurisdictions. Local authorities aren't informed where those alleged illegals are being taken. Cummins said the vast majority of the illegals being brought into the Noble County Jail have allegedly committed a minor traffic violation, with the most common offense being driving without ever obtaining a license, a Class C misdemeanor. The number of suspected illegal immigrants being booked into the jail hasn't changed much. I'm not seeing a drastic shift, increase or decrease, Cummins said. Next, from KPC News, the Albion New Era. Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Noble Commissioners Pass Proclamation for October, by Matt Getz. Albion. Noble County prosecuting attorney Jim Mowry said domestic violence cases peaked near the end of the COVID-19 pandemic. Numbers have settled to pre-COVID levels, but they're still too high, and one domestic violence case is too many. Mowry brought victim advocate Jasmine Hudgen and assistant victim advocate Desiree Burdett to Monday's regularly scheduled meeting of the Noble County Commissioners. The commissioners approved a proclamation provided by Mowry declaring October to be Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Mowry's office will be raising awareness by various projects during the month, including decorating areas of the Noble County Courthouse and Noble County Annex with reminders. The purpose of the awareness designation? Mowry said it is threefold: to encourage victims to report the crime, to let victims know there are resources available even if they choose not to press charges, to help get them out of violent, destructive circumstances, and to let perpetrators know there are consequences for their behavior. The goal is not just to end the violence, but to end its insidious cycle. According to Mowry, a child witnesses domestic violence is the strongest indicator of passing domestic violence from one generation to another. Also, at Monday's regularly scheduled meeting, Jenna Anderson, who is now the Director of Programs for the Northeast Indiana Early Childhood Coalition, provided a wrap-up for the Noble County TriShare program. The TriShare program was a collaborative that paid for child care by one-third governmental investment, one-third employer contributions, and one-third family cost. The Noble County Commissioners contributed $50,000 from their seated budget in February 2023 as the government share of the program. The Cole Center Family YMCA, Central Noble Schools, and West Noble Schools signed on to participate, provided their own in-kind funding to help support child care needs in Noble County. The program is drawing to a close in Noble County as there is now a regional collaborative that handles the program. The Noble County TriShare provided assistance to 12 families involving 14 children, saving those families approximately $90,000 in child care cost. West Noble's program will be expiring as of December 19. Central Noble's program will close at the end of the 2025 and 2026 school year. It was a great pilot program to learn what we needed to go regional with it, Anderson told the commissioners on Monday. The regional effort had an initial $5 million investment, but those funds are quickly dwindling. When the program started, the area struggled to have enough capacity to handle the need for affordable child care. Now the problem has shifted. Now it's an affordability issue, Anderson said. Recent government cuts to child care programming assistance are already being felt. The commissioners voted to require departments that are having bottled drinking water brought in for their employees to pay for the water out of their own budgets. Some departments, the commissioner said, such as the Noble County Auditor's Office, pay for the bottled water out of their own pockets. Some are already paying for the service out of their approved budgets. But some are submitting claims to be paid out of the county's general fund, and that's the category that concerned the commissioners. I think we should put a stop to it, Commissioner Anita Hess said. I'm okay with them taking it out of their own budget. Hess made a motion to that effect. Commissioner Gary Timmerman provided the second. The measure carried 3-0. The change will go into effect for all the county's buildings, including the office complex south. Next, from KPC News. the Albion New Era. Potential County Road 600 West Project Taking Shape by Matt Goetz. Albion. The Noble County Highway Department will be pursuing a federal aid project that could bring much-needed improvements to County Road 600 West, north of US 6. But it won't happen overnight, and it will be far from cheap. Highway Department engineer Zach Smith reported to the Noble County Commissioners that he would be submitting three bridge projects and a fourth project that would widen County Road 600 West in November. The County Road 600 West project would provide 8-foot paved shoulders on both sides of the highway from County Road 775 North to County Road 900 North. The price of the project, including engineering design cost, right-of-way acquisitions, and constructions cost, will be estimated at $9 million. If accepted as a project by the Indiana Department of Transportation, the county would be required to pay 20% of that cost, $1.8 million. Construction, if all goes well, would take place beginning in 2031. Smith has broken the project up into five phases, with projected new phase applications taking place every other year. With no guarantees of getting the project awards every time the county submits, it could easily be mid-2040s before the project is finished. Smith said the project would be a long-term investment for the county. That road sees heavy traffic from manufactured housing builders in the Topeka area. These manufactured houses are placed on wide road trailers, making County Road 600 West difficult for not only the semis hauling the houses, but for motorists who come upon them. That road is also heavily traveled by Amish buggies and bicyclists. The shoulders would be wide enough to create a partial lane for buggies and the cyclist. It's a safety project, Smith said. The commissioners haven't formally committed to the project, but Commissioner President Gary Leatherman said it is a worthwhile endeavor, particularly with the state potentially paying for 80% of the work. It would be very beneficial to the county, Leatherman said. We need to be very proactive with what we are doing. Also, on Monday's regularly scheduled commissioners' meeting, the commissioners provided an inspection contract with the company that installed trees at the old Noble County landfill. The trees were installed, at least in part, to soak up some of the harmful chemicals that have been leaching to the surface at the landfill. The county spent more than $200,000 in 2021 to plant the trees. The same company would be coming at least once a year to inspect the health of the trees as well as to take soil samples. The cost of each inspection visit is $7,900. Leatherman said the inspection cost is high, but with the investment the county has already made in the project, it is worthwhile to make sure it's working effectively. The commissioners also received an updated report on the Health First Indiana program from the Noble County Health Department. The report said the Health First Indiana funds have been used to form partnerships with Noble County Wellness Committee, Noble County Council on Aging, Be Noble, Noble County Economic Development Corporation, St. Martin's Healthcare Incorporated, Bowen Health, and Iris, formerly SCAN Incorporated. The Noble County Health Department's environmental specialist has partnered with three cities and towns to determine whether to implement targets, mosquito control measures. The environmental specialist has also sprayed larvicide at 3 public areas. Next, from KPC News, the Albion New Era. Sports. Cougars fall to potent Laker offense, 42-8, by Jeff Jones. LaGrange. In high school football action Friday, host Lakeland scored on 5 of its first 6 offensive possessions to dominate the Central Noble Cougars. In the first half alone, Braden Holbrook was 6-for-10 for 172 yards, 3 touchdowns, and Lakeland took a 35-0 lead into halftime. Lakeland outgained Central Noble 267-61 yards in total offensive yards in the first half. The second half was played with a running clock. The game started with a bang. On the second play from scrimmage, Holbrook found Kenyon Arroyo on an 86-yard touchdown connection. The teams traded punts from there, with the final play of that stretch, a Holbrook punt that was downed on the Central Noble 1-yard line. Central Noble got on the scoreboard late, facing a 2nd-and-5 call from its own 5. Quarterback Trayton Fletcher hit Nick Freeman on a screen pass. The Lakeland defensive back fell down and Freeman got the corner. Freeman muscled his way through a Lakeland tackle try at midfield and was off to the races. Fletcher finished 10-for-24 for 134 yards. Connor Fish had a team best 43 yards on 4 carries. In other football scores for Friday, West Noble 17, Garrett 8, East Noble 35, Norwell 0, Angola 35, Fairfield 8, Cherubusco 36, Fremont 14, East Side 42, Prairie Heights 0, and DeKalb 42, Huntington North 28. And now, from KPC News, from Garrett, Indiana, the Garrett Clipper, dated Tuesday, September 30th, 2025. Copyright 2025, kpcnews.com. School board hears from public on book removal. The 6 titles are in the school library, but are not part of the curriculum. By Sue Carpenter. Garrett. A standing room crowd of some 100 filled the Garrett Kaiser Butler School Board meeting room September 22nd in response to recent decisions regarding the removal of books from the school curriculum. At a 20-minute September 5th special session to approve instructional materials that apply to Policy 2221, 6 books were singled out by the board following review to be stricken from the curriculum. Those books are The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood, Forrest Gump by Winston Groom, A Thousand Splendid Sons by Khaled Hosseini, Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou, A Good Girl's Guide to Murder by Holly Jackson, and Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. The new policy states that if there is human sexuality as a contextual piece of the book, instruction, or movie, it will need to go through the process of board approval, posting online and parent permission slips signed before being used in the classroom. Instructors in all grade levels submitted classroom curriculum for this school year. There were compiled into 1 complete list for the school board to review and approve. At the outset of the September 5 meeting, board member Dottie Fuentes made a motion to approve all of the titles and materials on the list. That motion died due to a lack of second. Fuentes argued the list should stand as submitted, leaving the decision to parents to decide if the curriculum is appropriate for their own children. Fuentes opposed the action for the removal in the 4-1 vote. As the legislation changed at the state level last spring, new policies have been created to govern school corporations. Policy 2221 and SEA 442 have new language, and therefore we had our first reading in July and second reading in August at both board meetings, Superintendent Dan Durwalter said, following the September 5th session. At the September 22 meeting, 9 patrons took turns at the podium during the session. They were each given 2 minutes to address board members. Board members did not respond to comments. Rebecca Garber renewed the same comments she made at the board's work session last week, where she requested more information regarding the legislation under which the decision was made. Garber asked who had the concern regarding the books. Parents? Teachers? Board members directed her to email them with any questions, with only Fuentes responding. Pat Wyant, a former teacher, parent, and concerned citizen, who also spoke at the board's recent work session, returned at the September 22 meeting. When we ban books, we do not protect. We deny them the opportunity to, Wyant said. I urge you to not consider what is being removed, but what is being lost. Curiosity, empathy, and the courage to think critically. She asked the board to trust the teachers. David Brown, a 1993 Garrett graduate and parent, responded that he has read the new law during training in May 2025. The school's policy differs so much from what the law said, Brown remarked. He asked why the school's legal advisor and curriculum director were not involved in the decision. Only one board member showed due diligence, he said, and urged the board to seek proper legal advice. Suzanne Stafford, who served on the school board for 12 years, said her fundamental concern was not educational but political, remarking by the board, "Overriding educators sets a dangerous precedent. We must, doctors, engineers, and accountants, we should trust educators," Stafford said. "I urge you to let professionals do their job and reject book bans." John Cordes commended the board on its decision. The Garrett grad said his family's legacy with Garrett Schools will not be moving forward in the future. "There seems to be a group who wants to push out certain thoughts in schools' system, home or private curriculum or ideas," he said. Bud Owen shared concern regarding walls being set up, with many in the audience already having their minds made up on the subject, and a big breakdown in communication. "Somewhere we need to find some common ground with respect," Owen said, noting the books have not been banned in the library but cannot be used in the curriculum. During board member comments at the conclusion of the meeting, all 5 thanked everyone for attending. Matt Fries said the removal of the 6 books was not a lighthearted decision. After searching the content, writer context, looking at other schools in the nation, and any movies made from books and their ratings, "I am backing the citizens I represent," Fries said. Fuentes agrees the issue should be re-examined with legal counsel. "It is important to say the decision was made as a board, and we have to be able to accept it as a consensus of the board," she said. Fuentes encouraged the public to share their voices and to support teachers. Board President Mark Thrush emphasized the action was not a ban, only pulling the books from curriculum. Students can freely read the books if parents allow. Thrush added he is not planning to bring the issue back for a vote and is committed to moving forward. My stand on this is not going to change, Thrush said. Next, from KPC News, the Garrett Clipper. Garrett Homecoming. Riley Crowell was crowned Garrett's homecoming queen at halftime of Friday's football game. She is shown with Owen Haynes, who is standing in for homecoming king Jackson Ensley. Ensley is a member of the football team. Next, from KPC News, the Garrett Clipper. Bailey inducted into Garrett's Distinguished Alumni Hall of Honor. During a solemn ceremony Friday, Indiana State Police Master Trooper James Bailey, a 1991 Garrett graduate, was posthumously inducted into the Garrett Distinguished Alumni Hall of Honor. Bailey died in the line of duty on March 3, 2023. The ceremony was attended by his widow, two children, and several troopers from Indiana State Police. Next, from KPC News, the Garrett Clipper. Two arrested in connection with Fair shooting. Auburn. Police arrested two people, one from Angola and another from Garrett, in connection with shots being fired just before 8:30 p.m. Wednesday in close proximity to the DeKalb County Freefall Fair. Auburn police reported. Darian Hunter, age 20, of the 700 block of Bailey Court, Angola, was arrested at 2:39 a.m. Thursday and has been preliminarily charged with possession of a firearm by a serious violent felon, a level 4 felony, and criminal recklessness with a deadly weapon, a level 5 felony. Aaron McNutt, age 19, of the 200 block of South Ijams Street, Garrett, was arrested at 1:55 p.m. Thursday. He has been charged with intimidation, a level 6 felony, and harassment, a level B misdemeanor. Auburn Police Chief Corey Heffelfinger said officers from the Auburn Police Department, DeKalb County Sheriff's Department Office, and members of the Auburn Fire Department responded to the initial call and were on scene within 2 minutes, at which time they were able to assess and control the situation. No injuries were reported, police said. The fair midway, concessions, and activities remained open. Several persons of interest were detained at that time and shortly thereafter. Following a preliminary investigation, it was determined that no one had been injured by the gunfire, and there was no further immediate threat to the public, Heffelfinger said. The Auburn Police Department, with assistance from the Indiana State Police, began a full investigation. Through witness interviews, video footage from local businesses and residents, and other evidence, investigators identified the shooter as Darian Hunter, age 20, of Angola, Indiana. Heffelfinger said Hunter was later arrested at his residence in Angola without incident. The DeKalb County Prosecutor's Office will review the case and make the final charging decision for all individuals and crimes involved. While this appears to be an isolated incident, the Auburn Police Department understands the community's concern for the safety of the DeKalb County Freefall Fair. Police have been working closely with the DeKalb County Fair Board to coordinate additional security resources, Heffelfinger said. Video evidence shows a brief physical altercation between several young males, during which one individual received minor injuries. Hunter can be seen running toward the group, briefly engaging in the altercation, then drawing a handgun, firing two rounds, and fleeing north on 6th Street. No additional gunfire was located, and there is no evidence of any other shooting at the fairgrounds or surrounding area. In a news release issued Thursday afternoon, McNutt was identified as sending threatening messages via Snapchat. During an interview, McNutt acknowledged that the messages could be perceived as threatening, but denied any intent to carry out violent acts. Police seized several firearms belonging to McNutt during the investigation. There was a significant police presence throughout the rest of the fair. A criminal charge is merely an accusation, and the defendant is presumed innocent until proven guilty in court. Anyone with information regarding threats from other parties is encouraged to contact Lieutenant Detective Aaron Quick at 920-3200, extension 1905. Next, from KPC News, the Garrett Clipper. Sports briefs. Varsity volleyball. Volleyball team splits NECC road matches. Garrett's varsity volleyball team was on the road this past week, winning at Westview on September 23 and losing to host Angola Thursday. The Railroaders are 15-6 in all matches and 7-2 in Northeast Corner Conference play. At Emma, Garrett topped Westview 25-19, 25-23, 25-15. Sophomore Kaylin York led the way for Garrett with 14 kills. Sophomore Hadley Floto picked up 8. Junior Amelia Gesterke had 7. Senior Sarah Depew had 6 kills, and freshman Piper Ice had 4. Gesterke served 6 of Garrett's 11 aces in the match. Freshman Kaylee Garr picked up 20 digs, and Depew had 10. Junior Rylan Floto had 33 assists. Junior Chloe Yoder had 16 kills for Westview. On Thursday, Angola was a three-set winner over Garrett, winning 25-15, 25-16, 25-20. For the Hornets, senior Maya Harris had 23 kills. Sophomore Kendall Holman had 8, and sophomore Chloe Stanner added 6. Harris served 4 aces. Holman had 3 blocks. Depew and York had 6 kills each for the Railroaders, while Gesterke picked up 4. Garr had a team-best 12 digs, and Rylan Floto had 14 assists. And now, from KPC News, from Auburn, Indiana, The Star, dated Wednesday, October 1, 2025. It's a three-peat for Kirsten Haynes, DeKalb's Supreme Showman for third year in a row, by Sue Carpenter. Auburn. It was a three-peat for Kirsten Haynes in Friday's 4-H Supreme Showman contest. Haynes said one of her biggest inspirations is her grandfather, Charlie Howe, who taught her so many things about livestock and so many lessons. Haynes is the daughter of Sarah Haynes. She is a 2025 graduate of Eastside High School and is currently a freshman Purdue University studying agronomy. She has been coming home on weekends to prepare her animals for 4-H competition. Haynes is a member of the 4-H Power Club. She qualified for Friday's contest as premier showman in the sheep competition earlier in the week. But this year's contest added a new twist to the competition, with the contenders showing rabbits and chickens. President Kyle Yard said the 4-H Council Committee decided to include new species to the usual 7 to offer wider participation in the event. In addition to the rabbits and chickens, each contestant showed animals in different species: beef, dairy, dairy beef, meat goats, dairy goats, sheep, and swine. The contest was judged by Tyler Johnson of Greensburg and a Whitley County native. The contest took place in front of a large audience in the show barn. Even if the breed was one of a contestant showed during the fair, they showed animals that weren't their own. Some animals proved challenging during the contest, with sheep running away from their handlers and heifers and cows acting contrary to handlers' directions, causing frustration on the faces of contestants. Next, from KPC News, The Star. County still working to restore systems. Auburn. DeKalb County officials said Monday night that work continues to restore the county government's computer system. The DeKalb County Commissioners, Attorney, Auditor, Information Technology, and Emergency Management continue to work unified with outside contractors to restore our DeKalb County government computer system, according to a news release issued Monday evening. On September 25, 2025, the DeKalb County Information Technology Department became aware of a cyber incident which was impacting our ability as a county organization to log into workstations. The Information Technology Director contacted Director Jason Meek, DeKalb County Emergency Management, immediately upon learning of the incident. Emergency Management Information Technology, the County Commissioners, Attorney, and Auditor began working collectively to inform law enforcement, cybersecurity officials, and respond to the incident. Outside contractors were hired and have been working with county officials since Thursday. We are continuing to work with outside contractors to restore our computer systems and phones to operational status. Since Thursday, the 911 Central Communication Center has operated efficiently to handle public safety needs. This continues to be our number one priority to ensure public safety emergencies are handled efficiently and effectively. At this time, our investigation remains ongoing, and to ensure we are providing accurate information, we are currently unable to provide additional details. We will share important updates as they become available and verified. We truly appreciate the public and employee support and patience as we continue to work through the cyber incident. And now, from Bluffton, Indiana, the News Banner, dated Wednesday, October 1, 2025. Wicker will fill Jefferson Township Board vacancy. Ossian Clerk Treasurer remains vacant. By Holly Gaskill. Jeffrey J.J. Wicker has been appointed to serve on the Jefferson Township Board. Wicker fills the vacancy created by A.J. Springer, who resigned from the board after being appointed to fill the township's trustee vacancy. Wicker, the son of County Council President Seth Wicker, was the sole candidate to file with the Wells County Republican Party. J.J. is a great addition to the Jefferson Township Advisory Board, said party chairman Preston Wright in a media release. He is young, brings lots of energy, and we are grateful he was willing to step up and serve his community. Wicker's term will continue through 2026. All Jefferson Township Board seats will appear on the November 2026 ballot, wherein the township has voted to begin staggering its elections. The candidate with the most votes will receive a 4-year term and the following 2 year candidates will receive 2 year terms. Jefferson Township's board will meet next at 6 p.m. on October 8th. The party had no candidates file for the Ossian Clerk Treasurer vacancy created by Carolyn Birch's resignation in September. The responsibility to fill the vacancy will fall to the Ossian Town Council on October 5. Next, from the Bluffton News Banner. Building code violation progresses to city attorney by Jonathan Snyder. Bluffton's Board of Public Works and Safety moved forward with legal proceedings for the owners of 1100 South Main Street after building code violations surpassed the 60-day compliance period. The site of the Old Wells Community Hospital building has fallen into disrepair, with mold growing throughout the building, cracks in concrete walls, and rotting exterior window frames. Building Commissioner Richard Triplett told the board Tuesday that he posted the violation on the door of the property and sent a certified letter to the owner in Massachusetts, who never signed the receipt to receive said letter. Triplett said that the Massachusetts owner has been previously notified of fire code violations with the building, which were signed for. Additionally, Triplett said that the owner denied permission for city officials to go onto the property and board up the area to prevent access. Board members Rick Elwell and Josh Hunt said that the faster the legal proceedings can move along, the better. The board gave permission for the situation to be handled by city attorney Tony Crowell. Also during Tuesday's meeting, the board heard an opioid settlement fund request from Wells County Council on Aging Executive Director Betsy Collier. Collier requested $19,000 to help fund transportation through Wells on Wheels to meetings and treatments for people struggling with substance abuse. The funds will also be used to help train personnel for situations involving substance abuse. This expense would be an additional add-on to the normal yearly funds given by the city. The board was favorable to the request, but wanted to see a reimbursement-based model for funding rather than one chunk for the year. Menzer and Hunt noted that the data showing the amount of trips taken per year for drug-related programs is likely to change beyond the 500 trips estimated. Menzer pushed for a quarterly-style report on the amount of trips used for drug-related issues, which Collier was amenable to. The request was then added to the Bluffton Common Council's October 28 agenda. I just don't want to take money away from the cause if the number of trips is not accurate, Menzer said, and I want to support the cause if the number is truly higher than this. Police Chief Kyle Randall was also approved to transfer $1,800 from his training line item to his travel line item. The department hired a new detective in August, and the transfer will cover travel expenses to training sessions. Additionally, Water Treatment Plant Supervisor Todd Shady was given a $1 hourly raise by the board. The board also paid a $828,000 state revolving fund expense to James S. Jackson Construction Company for work on the wastewater treatment plant. And now, from KPC News, from Kendallville, Indiana, the News Sun, dated Wednesday, October 1, 2025. Copyright 2025, kpcnews.com. East Noble staffer on leave for alleged conduct by Cheryl Prentice, Kendallville. East Noble School Corporation issued a statement late Monday regarding a staff member's alleged inappropriate conduct. Here is the statement. East Noble Community, on Friday, September 26, East Noble School Corporation administrators were made aware of allegations involving a staff member's conduct that does not align with the values and expectations of our institution. The individual was immediately placed on administrative leave following an internal review. The East Noble administration is recommending termination as of September 29. We want to reaffirm our unwavering commitment to student safety and well-being. The conduct in question is entirely inconsistent with the standards we uphold, and East Noble School Corporation acted promptly and decisively in response. This matter has been referred to law enforcement for further investigation. While we cannot comment further due to the ongoing nature of the inquiry, please know that East Noble School Corporation remains dedicated to fostering a safe and respectful learning environment for all students. Sincerely, Teresa Grimaud, Superintendent, East Noble School Corporation. The school corporation had previously announced that the school board will hold 4 executive sessions on Monday, September 29, at 4:30 p.m., Tuesday, September 30th at 5 p.m., Monday, October 13th at 5 p.m., and Tuesday, October 14th at 5 p.m. All executive sessions will be held at the Community Learning Center for the purpose of receiving information about the interviewing prospective employees. The district is in the process of a search for a new superintendent because Grimaud is nearing retirement. Next, from KPC News, The New Sun. We are not closing. Central Noble School Superintendent addresses rumor during work session by Matt Goetz, Albion. To paraphrase American literary icon Mark Twain, rumors of Central Noble's death are greatly exaggerated. During Monday's school board work session, Central Noble Superintendent Robbie Morgan made it a point to emphasize that social media rumors about the corporation's demise simply are not true. "We are not closing," Morgan said. The main purpose of Monday's work session, which attracted a crowd of approximately 80 community leaders, school patrons, parents, and teachers, was to gather input regarding possible cost-saving measures. The system isn't in danger of closing its doors, but it does find itself in some serious financial straits. "We can't stay the way it is," Morgan said. "We have to do something." The school board presentations Monday, but made no vote on 3 options: closing Central Noble Primary in Wolf Lake, moving to a micro school model to attract more students, and moving to a 4-day school week. The board seemed to be interested in gathering more information on all 3 proposals, which it could take up again at another work session scheduled for 5 p.m. November 3. Dwindling enrollment has hurt the corporation's finances. The state's funding formula provides nearly $8,000 per pupil. In voting last spring, 55.3% of district ballots cast were against an operations referendum that would have provided an additional $1.4 million in revenue annually. Support for the referendum totaled 569 ballots cast, 44.7%. The referendum called for an additional 19 cents per $100 of assessed valuation for a property owner. A resident who owned a $150,000 home in the district would have paid an additional $10.50 per month if the referendum had passed. or an additional $125 per year. For a farmer with 100 acres of agricultural land, it would have meant an additional $454 in annual property taxes. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Rich Krause with Area News. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading services of the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.